Well, welcome back to HealthLink On Air, brought to you each week by SUNY Upstate Medical University, making the academic difference in healthcare in the Central New York community. This is your host, Tricia Torrey, Every Patient's Advocate, along with my co-host for our monthly ethics sessions, Difficult Decisions in Healthcare, Dr. Gregory Eastwood from Upstate Center for Bioethics and Humanities. Welcome back, Dr. Eastwood.
Good to be back, Tricia.
I so much look forward to these conversations because they really are areas where patients can take such interest. You know, we might cover a disease that they don't have, maybe someday they will, but ethics questions are always things that they have interest in. And it seems like a long time since you were here last. Our last discussion was about organ donation. Yeah. Today we're going to talk about an entirely different subject. Will you describe it for us?
Well, this has to do with the interactions of the medical profession, mostly physicians, with the drug and device manufacturers. This is something that has occurred for many decades. Physicians have been interacting with industry for many, many decades.
And learning from them.
And learning from them, yes, and being part of them, too. Mm-hmm. But over the last 5 to 10 years, it's become more of an interest both to the regulators, our senators, to the drug manufacturers, physicians, to the general public.
Yes, yes, and of interest because it raises some question marks about how decisions are being made for individual patients. And that would basically be what our conflict is today that we're talking about, isn't it?
That's right. Well, it raises the issue of conflict of interest. You know, physicians usually take an oath to put the patient first. Mm-hmm. And if physicians have relationships with the drug industry or the device manufacturing industry, that raises the question, do they also have an obligation in that direction?
Well, you know, I like to look at the world from points of view. And quite often, I can argue almost anybody's side in it. And when we say that whether or not doctors are making decisions in the best interests of their patients, I will often say to patients, you know, a doctor often needs to be a business person first. Mm-hmm. And they need to be a business person because if they can't keep their lights on and their staff paid and their reimbursements coming in, they can't keep the doors open to take care of you. And so if that's not their number one issue, they won't be there the next time you need them anyway. Mm-hmm. But let's step back. Talking about points of view, let's look first at these manufacturers, the pharmaceutical manufacturers and the drug device manufacturers. What is their point of view in a subject like this?
Well, I think the pharmaceutical manufacturers and the device manufacturers have different points of view. They, of course, are businesses, and in our society, those businesses are expected to make money. And the point you made earlier about physicians, if there's no money, there's
That's
no
right.
mission.
That's exactly right.
Well, certainly if there's no money to run a pharmaceutical company, they can't make the drugs that they make.
Right. And even further, by law, they are beholden to their investors before they're beholden to anyone else.
Yeah, most of these are publicly traded companies, and so that they do are expected to make a profit.
Mm-hmm.
And they also use money to develop new drugs. There's a substantial amount of their income that's devoted to this. Now, it happens to be proportionally less than what they use for promotion, mm-hmm. but still, they use about 13% of their overall profits for research and development, which is a huge amount of money.
It is a huge amount of money. And, you know, honestly, if they weren't doing that, I don't know that we would end up with new drugs or new devices, would we?
Well, new drugs and devices are primarily developed by private companies.
Mm-hmm.
In the United States, the U.S. government, through the National Institute of Health, does very little of that. The NIH dollars, which are substantial, basically go to support research, but not in the development of new drugs.
And when they're developing those new drugs, those are the new drugs we're hearing about that are potentially life-saving drugs. They're the drugs that we hear about that are solving childhood cancers, for instance, or mm-hmm. Helping people who have had a heart attack in their 40s live until their 80s. So those are the drugs that are important to us.
That's right. They're very important. And we can look back over the last several decades and identify a number of new drugs that have really changed our lives for the better. Now, the drug companies do not do this in isolation. They often have relationships with academia, with physicians, with researchers who are not directly employed by the drug companies. And that's a good, productive relationship.
Yes, that definitely is a good, productive relationship. But if you think about it, the pharmaceutical companies need access to the people that those drugs are going to benefit. And the way they get that access is through physicians, through researchers, through hospitals. And they've established these relationships, but now the access seems to have changed and shifted, hasn't it?
Well, I think it's not only changed and shifted, but it's coming under a lot of scrutiny. There is a concern that the drug representatives who visit physicians, sometimes on a weekly basis, sometimes more often, know a lot about the physician's prescribing habits. And this is in private practice, in academics, wherever it might be.
Mm-hmm. And in full disclosure, let me mention that my daughter is a pharmaceutical rep. In fact, she works for a division of Johnson & Johnson. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, she's not selling any of these drugs or making any of these questionable kinds of things, at least that I know about. But I do hear her point of view. And her point of view is her job is to go and teach these physicians about the science of why a drug works, about the benefits of why a drug works. And, you know, that's the same no matter what kind of company we're talking about. If she were working for Sony, she'd be trying to sell people on the benefits of a Sony TV over somebody else's. Should it be any different?
Well, there is a difference between Sony and drug manufacturers. They both, of course, one similarity is they both need to sell their products in order to make money.
Mm-hmm.
But one big difference is that you theoretically have the option whether to buy a TV or not.
Yes, that's right.
Or a cell phone or something like that. In healthcare, specifically drugs and devices, you don't have as much of an option. Most people don't know very much about drugs, and they rely on their physicians to prescribe the drugs for them. So that is a big difference.
It's definitely a difference, and the physician becomes the gatekeeper.
That's right. Also, you were mentioning earlier the educational function of drug manufacturers mm-hmm. and the drug representatives, and I think that is substantial. It has been criticized, and I think that you can criticize it because sometimes it is. We think it might be biased, but let me just read from what the most recent January 2009 pharmaceutical industry guidelines are about this.
Okay.
They recognize that their relationships with healthcare professionals, including physicians, are very critical, and they identify four goals. One is to inform physicians and other healthcare professionals about the benefits and risks of their products. The second is to provide scientific and educational information. The third is to support medical research and education. And the last one is to obtain feedback and advice about their products through consultation with medical experts. And mm-hmm. all that really sounds pretty good.
It all does sound really good. And I think the real question, though, is, and you mentioned this has actually been going on for decades, as it should, the real question now is exactly how they're obtaining that information from the people they're working with. And that raises the question of money. And that raises the question of who's being paid for what kind of information, and are they only being paid for information?
Well, this is where we start to make a little shift in our
conversation. That's right. And this is where the ethics comes in.
Because it is big money, mm-hmm. and there are companies now who are in the business of selling prescribing information to pharmaceutical companies.
And explain how that works, if you will.
Well, these companies get prescribing information from large conglomerates. You can name any large pharmaceutical chain, and many of those chains sell the prescribing information.
And when you're saying chains, you're talking about the drugstores. You're talking about the neighborhood pharmacies
That's right.
We all use to get drugs, or even the mail order companies that we get our drugs from.
Any of those.
Mm-hmm.
They also buy information from the American Medical Association. In fact, about 3 or 4 years ago, the American Medical Association received about 15% of its annual total operating budget, which totaled about $45 million, from the sale of information about physicians. And this information about physicians was not just AMA members. It is anybody.
Anybody at all. And so what's happening is these conglomerates are buying information from the AMA, from the local drugstores, all the people, about exactly which prescriptions are being written by exactly which doctor. Now, I don't believe patient names are assigned to those.
No,
am I right?
No, it's anonymous.
Right.
But what this means is that a drug representative, when he or she visits a physician, knows pretty much the prescribing habits of that physician.
And then they make decisions based on that. I've had conversations with drug reps, and I know many of them. They're people that I get good information from and who share information anonymously with me, by the way. And they tell me, they know, if I go call on Dr. X, I know that he or she has written X number of my prescriptions compared to my competitors.
That's right.
And then they know what information to give to the doctor. And then they leave behind. They leave behind pens, pencils, lunch for the office. They invite them to dinners because the hope is that they can influence that doctor to write more prescriptions.
That's right. Now, you could ask, what's wrong with a pen or a notepad? I'm not influenced by that. That's what most physicians say.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, some studies have shown that that's not true, that physicians who do receive even trinkets, little gifts, change their prescribing habits.
Right. Or they leave the physician with samples.
With samples, and those and are useful.
They can be useful, mm-hmm. except that they send patients off on a very expensive ritual of drugs, perhaps for the rest of their lives.
That is what I think the drug manufacturers are hoping.
Exactly.
But this idea of small gifts is an interesting sociologic thing. It initiates the idea of reciprocity, and this is a subconscious thing, well developed in the sociologic literature.
Yes.
That physicians feel the need to reciprocate in some fashion.
They do. And so then the big question becomes, is that reciprocation, is that inside information, how is that influencing the prescribing habits of the doctors? And then how are patients being influenced? And we have other questions too. We have questions about advertising on TV, in magazines, on the radio, on the internet. All kinds of questions about the way we're being influenced by pharmaceutical companies. And I'm going to leave that for the moment. We do need to take a break for the news. When we come back, we're going to talk a little more about that influence and then maybe some tools patients can use to look into this, to get the information they need to make sure they're getting the right things. Sound good to you?
That sounds great.
Very good. And we are going to break for the news. So listeners, please do stay with us. This is SUNY Upstate Medical University's HealthLink on Air on 570 WSYR.